Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed by Richard Martin, Senior Vice President of Global Strategic Investments, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are entirely unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Richard Martin here. As always, on a Monday morning, our new time, new day, or rather old time, new day, with another edition of Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. Well, I thought I'd start today with a little quote from James Kunstler, who comes out every Monday with a scintillating column about the ways of the world, and the state of things, and he says as follows. He says, "We're not heading into a recession, but a major depression, worse than the fabled trauma of the 1930s. That one occurred against the background of a society that had plenty of everything except money. Back then, we had plenty of mineral resources, lots of trained and regimented manpower, millions of productive family farms, factories that were practically new, and more than 90% left of the greatest petroleum reserve anywhere in the world. It took a world war to get all that stuff humming cooperatively again, and once it did, we devoted its productive capacity to building an empire of happy motoring leisure." Tragic choice there. "This new depression, which I call the long emergency, will play out against the background of a society that has pissed away its oil endowment, bulldozed its factories, arbitraged its productive labor, destroyed both family farms and the commercial infrastructure of Main Street, and trained its population to become overfed, diabetic, TV zombie consumers of other people's productivity, paid for by money they haven't earned." Well, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. I am very, very disappointed in Ben Bernanke, the new head of the Federal Reserve. I did think at first he was just clueless. I thought he was a deer frozen in the headlights, as they say. But, you know, his cravenness knows no bounds. Despite the worsening inflation picture that we have seen in recent months, by the third week of January, the Fed had again caved into the pressure of declining markets worldwide and enacted the steepest Fed funds rate cut in 23 years. Of course, this was another surprise rate cut, and it came just 1 week before a regularly scheduled Fed meeting. In a little over a week's time, the Fed had gutted the Fed funds rate by 125 basis points, or 29.4%. You know, this Bernanke-led Fed is a sight to see. Bernanke is beginning to make Greenspan look more like Paul Volcker with every panic cut. Even Greenspan only cut 37 basis points in response to the stock market crash of October 1987. And Greenspan waited for the regularly scheduled meeting in November to enact it. You know, let me remind you that it was Ben Bernanke as a Fed board member who helped persuade Greenspan to take rates down to 1% in 2003 and keep them there, thereby setting off the greatest credit binge and housing bubble that this country has ever seen. At the time, Bernanke believed that deflation was the risk. It was Bernanke who gave the speech to the National Economics Club in November 2002 entitled "Deflation, Making Sure It Doesn't Happen Here," in which he said in a section called "Curing Deflation." But the U.S. government has a technology called a printing press, or today its electronic equivalent, that allows it to produce as many U.S. dollars as it wishes at essentially no cost. End of quote. Well, no one should have been surprised at his actions over the past month. You know, somebody asked me, when will the market really crash? And I think I have an answer for you, ladies and gentlemen. I think the market will crash on the day that investors figure out that the Fed and other government entities cannot save them. There are hundreds of trillions of dollars of derivatives floating about, including $45 trillion of the highly flammable credit default swap types. The monoline insurers are still not yet saved. There's tremendous risk of counterparty failures. Yet the consensus is that all will be well. Analysts expect 16% growth in earnings from S&P 500 companies this year, with huge gains forecast for the second half of the year. Recent Wall Street journals have been full of it's time to buy stories. In this weekend's Financial Times, regular columnist Arne Olsen, portfolio manager of Olsen Capital, states, and I quote, staring you square in the face is the best buying opportunity in stocks in 18 years. Even some of the well-known bears have turned bullish. Richard Russell, 86 years old, stated last week, as I see it, the lows have been put in, but the upside remains open-ended. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the problems today are orders of magnitudes worse than in 2001. Back then, we were only dealing with the after effects of the tech stock bubble. Today, it's a housing and credit bubble that have gone bust, affecting a far larger number of people. In 2001, oil prices were $30 to $40 a barrel, not $90 to $100. Back then, the U.S. government was running budget surpluses, enabling the largest tax rate reductions, $1.35 trillion, in history. Today, the budget deficit for this year is forecast to be $410 billion, and that assumes no recession and doesn't include most of the costs for the Iraq-Afghanistan wars. There is no room for any similar kind of large tax cut today. Despite the lower short-term rates from the Fed, credit standards are tightening throughout the system, limiting the effects of the rate cuts. Household debt loads are at record levels relative to incomes and assets, and delinquencies and defaults have begun to soar, forcing banks to cut back on home equity, credit card, and auto lending. We're inching ever closer to the moment when investors realize the limitations of the government to save them this time. It will be what long-term market sage Ray DeVoe likes to call a crack of doom moment. Nevertheless, all still believe that our problems will dissipate by the second half of the year and that stocks will be higher by year end. That was the consensus of the recent Barron's Roundtable meeting held last month in New York. Well, excuse me, all I can say to that, ladies and gentlemen, is good luck. And you and I know better, and hopefully by now the regular listeners will have positioned themselves correctly, ignoring the hype and the nonsense, of which I will talk more in a few minutes, and are ready for anything that comes their way. All right. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we are together on Mondays and on Thursdays at 2 p.m., and I was very discouraged to see last Thursday that the listenership had collapsed. Obviously, many of you, I hope, will not necessarily be able to listen to me on a Thursday at 2 p.m., but will be able to listen to the archives, which I have specifically requested be updated immediately after the shows to enable you to do this for those of you who are unable to listen at 2 p.m. on a Thursday. The archives now do appear to be available on the same day. So please feel free to listen for the Thursday archive, hopefully on that day or maybe Friday, if you are unable to listen to the Friday show. Now I wanted to talk to you a little bit about money market funds. I had a question from a listener today who is very concerned, with good reason, But there is one thing I would like to tell you about last Thursday's show concerning a kind of roadmap which I laid out for how this present situation will finally morph into a total all-out panic in the markets. And it came courtesy of Nouriel Roubini. And as I said, since it was clear that many of you were unable to listen in on Thursday at 2 p.m., I would make a special request for you, for all of you, to listen to my show from last Thursday, the 7th of February, and you can forego the humorous John Cleese bit at the beginning if you wish. Just go in to about 20 minutes into the program, where you will find a list and an explanation of 12 steps which kind of inexorably lead to a total economic and financial meltdown. It's quite scary, actually, I think, if you're not sort of prepared for it. But at the same time, I think that it's worthwhile, very worthwhile, for you to access this information. So again, I would urge you to listen to my show from last Thursday, going in about 20 minutes to the show itself to access these 12 points. All right. The other thing I would say is that in the show, I mistakenly referred to Nouriel Roubini as being a professor at Columbia, and Steve Canero very kindly emailed me and pointed out my error and indicated that, in fact, it is New York University, NYU, where Roubini is a professor. So please accept that correction. So the next thing I want to talk to you very quickly about is money market funds. Now, I, as you know, have become more and more concerned about the fact that most of your money market funds will only have a commercially paper-based money market. They will not have what you really need, which is a treasury, U.S. treasury-based money market fund. This is a very serious development, and the more we progress into this meltdown, the more concerned I'm becoming. At this stage of the game, ladies and gentlemen, I have a piece of advice for you. Each of you should put pen to paper and write to the administrator of your 401ks, find out who that is in your company, write a registered or certified letter with receipt requested, return receipt requested, indicating that you are aware of problems in the commercial paper market and that this might involve your money market fund breaking the buck. That is the expression used to describe when a money market shares go below $1. As you know, all money market shares are quoted at $1 per share. You then receive dividends which correspond to the interest that is derived on a monthly basis. It's called dividends, but it is actually interest in effect. You need to tell in this letter, you need to say that you are aware of the problems in your money market funds, that you are requesting that they add into the mix of the menu in your 401k a treasury-based money market fund, and that you will hold your company liable if anything happens to your money market fund in the absence of a treasury-based money market fund. That's about the best you can do right now, but it will certainly jolt them and certainly galvanize them into action, in my opinion, though, of course, I could be wrong. Okay, now we will talk more about this, and I will continue to update you with my views about money market funds as time goes by, but that is what I suggest you do for the moment, to cover yourselves and to leave a paper trail of complaint. Okay. Right. Now, I thought, well, first of all, let's get the questions dealt with here. I have some email questions. My first emailed question is from Anthony Johnson, who writes, "Richard, what is the difference between Japan's recession depression in the 1990s and what the U.S. is going through now?" Anthony, Well, Anthony, it's very simple. The Japanese recession and depression in the 1990s was accompanied by considerable savings on the part of the Japanese consumer. It is much harder for Japanese people to spend money in Japan because the country is so much smaller. It's a kind of logistical function, but also because the cultural background is much more one of saving than it is of spending. Therefore, the fact that banks, like in this country, had a tendency to prop up shaky companies, and banks themselves were propped up if they were somewhat shaky in terms of their cash flow, this had a lesser impact on the consumer than it is having on the consumer here, and that it will have. Also, when they had their housing bust, there was much less of an exposure to mortgages because such things as subprime mortgages were unheard of, and banks were much more rigorous in assigning mortgages to clients than they have been in this country. So basically, and of course they did have a certain deflationary element to their economy, but prices for international goods were rising. So you didn't get the kind of deflation that we're going to be seeing here to go along with their recession, which was also in certain senses a depression. Now it's going to be much worse, not only for this country, but even for Japan as well. They're coming in for their kind of second dose of this, because now it is generally considered that the Japanese banks are much more highly exposed to American subprime problems than is generally thought. And that once this spills out into the open, it's going to have a dramatically deleterious effect on the Japanese economy. So, and and by the way, the Japanese stock market is also taking a tremendous tumble in recent weeks. So I hope that answers your question vaguely, Anthony. I'm sorry, it's not. I don't really have time to go into it in more detail, but that gives you, you know, something of a something of an idea. Now, and I get a call, or rather an email, from Julie Mulliken, who says, I can't get the broadcast today, Tuesday, February the 11th. The webpage is not coming up. I do hope all of you have managed to discover that the webpage has changed to progressiveradionetwork.com from prncom.net. So hopefully you have uncovered this. But in the event that you haven't, I'm sure that you will, and hopefully, again, the archives will be up in time for you to listen in a timely fashion to today's broadcast. Okay. So I get another email also from Julie. Julie, I hope you're able to get the email. You know what I think I'll do for you, Julie? We'll hold off on this email until Thursday, because I'm not sure that you are actually able to get onto the program today, given your previous email. So let's leave that one aside. Steve Canero was very kind and wrote to me saying, Hi, Richard, some of us record your show using programs like Radio Play. There's a new address which I had to dig out myself that autoplays the station, which is, as we know, progressiveradionetwork.com/listen.html. So thank you very much for that, and hopefully most of you have found a way of getting on to the show. Okay, my name is Richard Martin. This is Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. If you'd like to call me directly, you can do so through my direct line at 305-357-5575. I repeat that, 305-357-5575. If you would like to email me, then you can do so, following in the footsteps of Julie and Steve, and others, by emailing me at the following address. All in lowercase, by the way, please. rmartin@gscorporation.com. GS stands for Global Strategic. It's the name of the company where I work here in Miami, Global Strategic Investments. And the word corporation must be written out in full. So let me repeat the email address once more, all lowercase, please. rmartin@gscorporation.com. Now, to prove that you are actually listening to this show and paying attention, it is always nice to know that I have some physical contact with my listeners in the form of a call made on our toll-free number to the station, to Progressive Radio Network. And I would like you to do this if you have questions, please, for the benefit of everybody here, by calling the following number, 888-873-4643. Let me repeat that number for you, please. 888-873-4643. Now, that is a number which is available to you throughout this show. You can call at any time. I will be informed that you are awaiting attention, and I will take your call at a propitious moment. So I would love to hear from you. If you, any of you want to call in with questions or comments, please feel free to do so, and I will be here. Okay. Then Ralph writes in also kindly with the direct address for Internet Stream, which is progressiveradionetwork.com/listen.html. And he says once you type that address in, you will be able to hear me immediately. So thank you, Ralph, very much for that information. Okay. Well, you know, I spent a lot of time in these talks warning you against stupid people who talk on radio and television shows. It's very dispiriting to think that there are so many professionals out there who really don't have a clue what's going on. And as often as not, when they do, they just lie to you because they have, you know, an ulterior motive in hoping to sort of get your business and make you do things that you really shouldn't be doing. And I constantly get bombarded with these kinds of shows as time goes by, and a particularly egregious one came up last week, and it was Larry King's show, of all places. I mean, Larry is himself actually, I think, a very good interviewer, and he doesn't tend to exhibit much of a bias. But this was a program in which he had a section with four so-called experts. One was Gene Chatsky, a contributing editor for Money magazine. Another was Dave Ramsey, who is the host of a nationally syndicated radio program and a bestseller, or best-selling author of a book called The Total Money Makeover. And then we had Kim Kiyosaki, a professional investor, the wife of the other Kiyosaki, who wrote, you know, Rich Man, Poor Dad, or something. I can't remember the name of the book, but it was a bestseller several years ago. And then there was Jerry Willis, CNN's personal finance editor. And these four people were basically talking, you know, about the present state of the economy. Jerry Willis, and I'm just going to read you some of the absurd comments that they made. And this is the kind of thing, I mean, fortunately for you, I hope fortunately for you, ladies and gentlemen, you do get some sane advice right here on the Progressive Radio Network in the form of Richard Martin's wake-up call. But, you know, when you hear things like, you have to be thinking more broadly about how you're going to save yourself, coming out of the mouth of Jerry Willis as an answer to Larry King's question, what are we going to do? What exactly does that mean? I mean, this is the sort of thing which I have so much of a problem with. These people don't have a clue. They really haven't got any kind of idea about how bad things are. So they say things like, you have to be thinking more broadly about how you're going to save yourself. Then Chatsky said a little bit later on, the point is, people should look at their own individual situations and decide whether or not they should spend the money. This is not a time when it's up to you or me or Jerry to go out and prop up the economy. This is the time to look really hard at what our situation is and say, do I have credit card debt that I need to pay back? Well, if any of you listeners could repeat back to me what I have just said, you know, I've been trying to, you know, pay out a lot of money because I don't think any of you understood that any better than I did. You know, let me repeat it. People should look at their own individual situations and decide whether or not they should spend the money. This is not a time when it's up to you or to me or to Jerry to go out and prop up the economy. This is the time to look really hard at what our situation is and say, do I have credit card debt that I need to pay back? Did you ever hear me say anything like that? Please call PRN right away and have me eliminated from Gary's radio station because I have no right to be there. This is nonsense. It is absolute incoherent gibberish of the first order. You know? And then Ramsey comes out. Oh, by the way, this is a transcript of the program. So I see right after that, in brackets or parentheses, as you say, is the word laughter. Well, what's funny about that? What's the joke? I don't see what the joke is. You know. Anyway, after the laughter, Ramsey weighs in with, the Kiyosakis are in a wonderful industry to be in right now, real estate. Man, what a great time to buy some real estate. Well, thank you, Ramsey. That's fine. Oh, and then Kiyosaki, I agree. And then afterwards, Ramsey, by which time he's now fired up, he says, what a great time to buy some mutual funds. You're at a Kmart and the blue light is on. And then Larry King, and I have this in parentheses, laughter. He laughs. This is funny. Well, you know, I don't know. This is somebody's sense of humor. It's certainly not mine. Then Willis says a little bit later on, take care, and then take advantage of the opportunities out there, because there are many. Yeah, right, Willis. So then Kiyosaki says, it's about taking charge of your personal finances. Oh, big deal. You know, as though most of us have no idea what we're doing. We just throw money out of the window, and now Kiyosaki feels it's time to rein in and take charge. You know, all this is pablum. It is nonsense. It is just to make you, so that when you finish at the end of a program like this, finish the end of the show, you're left asking yourself, what did I hear? What advice did I get? What were these people talking about? Well, guess what? They weren't talking about anything. By the time you're asking that question, they've all gone out into the night and they're having dinner in an expensive restaurant in Miami, in Manhattan. Okay? And they've forgotten all about the show. Here's another piece of nonsense from Kiyosaki. The first step is to find out where you are and then take action to where you want to get to. Right. Thank you so much. Well, at least Ramsey admits that in Tampa, Florida, the real estate is pretty crummy right now. But then she's asked by King, is it going to be crummy 5 years from now? Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can guess what she had to say, and you were right. And the answer is no. You buy it right now. 5 years from now, you're going to be a genius. Yeah, well, from one genius to another, I'd say get lost. So let me turn a few pages here so I can find another pearl of wisdom. Oh, yes, this comes from Kiyosaki. I think we need to get back to the fundamentals. You don't lend money to people who can't pay it back. And for the borrowers, they just need to get smarter. They need to pay attention. They need to read those documents. They need to be actively involved in what they're getting into financially. Well, thank you, Kiyosaki, but here's a question for you, moron. Were you saying that before the current meltdown? Because I bet you weren't. I bet before this stuff melted down, you were saying, yeah, go ahead. You should just get in. Oh, close your eyes. Just sign the documents. Get into that house quickly before the price goes any higher. I bet, I'm prepared to bet that you weren't saying that people should pay attention, read the documents, get actively involved. But now she wants to kind of position herself as the wise person who always recommended caution. Oh, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, good heavens, what else do we have? There's probably, oh, no, here's some more. Willis. And I quote, if you're getting out of the market right now, you're doing exactly the wrong thing because it starts taking off. It looks ahead into what's going on in the future, and it will start taking off as we get into the recession big time. Well, he's just the fact that you just contradicted yourself in the same sentence, moron. I mean, I suppose that makes no difference. Having said it starts to take off and then said it will start taking off, when it looks at what's going to happen in the future, I guess you've kind of ignored that. And then, of course, we come to the end of the show and we have to listen to whether they're pessimistic or optimistic. Well, King says, are you pessimistic or optimistic, Kim? And Kiyosaki says, this is a nice one. It depends on your definition. Remember, Clinton, it depends on what you mean by is, or it depends what is. Remember that one? Well, here we have, it depends on your definition. Well, Kiyosaki, why don't you go to the dictionary, open it up, and read the word pessimistic and optimistic, the two words there, and read what they mean. And then you'll have the definition, won't you, sweetheart? Mm. Then she says, there's huge opportunities, as Dave was saying earlier. There's a lot of opportunities in down markets, but you've got to know how to spot the opportunities. That's why I keep saying it's about financial education. It's about learning how to find those opportunities, because this actually could be a time, if you know what you're doing, to start building your financial security. Right. Thank you, Kiyosaki. Right at the beginning of a major worldwide depression, this is the time to start building your financial security. You know, if there were prisons for people like you, I would recommend a life sentence, you know? So I'm optimistic at the opportunities, you know? Ramsey, this is what Ramsey says about optimism and pessimism. On the short term, I am optimistic, and on the long term, I'm very, very optimistic. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the transcript. I hope you can hear what I'm doing. Okay, you can hear it? Can you hear it? I'm ripping up the transcript into little pieces of paper, and now I'm putting it in the trash. Well, you know, I spent an inordinate amount of time talking about this, but you get my point, and I am sure that you are as frustrated as I am. The difference is that I am frustrated knowing exactly why I'm frustrated. I know exactly what these people are doing. You, hopefully, are the same way right now, but you see, most of the time, most people that this bozo recommends should get educated and have a financial education. Do you know that 50% of the people in Los Angeles are illiterate? They can't even write their name. 50% of the residents of Los Angeles County cannot write their name. And this idiot says that they should be financially savvy. You get a financial education. You know, well, all I can say is if a depression has any meaning at all, it's to give these people their comeuppance. It's to show these people up for the imposters and charlatans that they really are. And I hope that you've all understood. I was fortunate enough to receive this from my wife. Actually, I asked her. She was very, very kind. She sent me this transcript literally moments before the beginning of this show. And to give great credit to my wife, she's a wonderful, wonderful person. And by the way, she berated me last week for not having explained when a listener asked what the music was that introduces the program. She told me that she asked me, why didn't you say that I was the one that chose the music? Because indeed it was her that chose the music. And so thank you very much, Marlene. I really appreciate it. Yes, very kind. And thank you for the transcript, because I wanted to relay this piece of nonsense to you. Ladies and gentlemen, you must have wondered why I sat through that whole program. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. You know, along with this does go this powerful element of denial, and it doesn't just hit analysts who should know better, who do know better, because actually they're lying to you, but, you know, don't tell them I told you. Denial in all walks of life can be a very powerful psychological force. Interestingly enough, according to a survey released earlier this week, last week, by Zillow.com, the real estate website that calculates home values, denial is precisely what appears to be at work in the minds of many homeowners, and that's across the entire country. They have managed to convince themselves that despite ample evidence to the contrary, their homes actually increased in value in 2007 or remained the same. And according to the survey, which was conducted for Zillow.com by Harris Interactive, not only do 77% of homeowners from around the country believe the value of their home has increased or stayed the same, but 67% say they plan to make major home improvements this year. About a third of the respondents say they are likely to take out a home equity loan or refinance their mortgage. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you have heard anything of what I've told you in these last few months, you should be cringing when you hear that. You know, these people who are being encouraged to dig themselves even deeper into the hellhole, the financial hellhole in which they find themselves, you know? And on all this, by the way, is in spite of a recent Merrill Lynch prediction that housing prices will remain in free fall, declining 15% in 2008 and 10% in 2009, and I quote, with more depreciation likely beyond the forecast period, even if the Federal Reserve continues to cut interest rates. Well, Stan Humphries, who is Zillow's Vice President of Data and Analytics, said the results of the survey could be attributed to the fact that most Americans have yet to try selling their homes. And I quote, most people are not really affected by declining values unless they absolutely must sell or need to immediately refinance, or withdraw equity. This has contributed to the healthy investment intent, particularly in home grades, despite the downward trending markets. Well, just some food for thought there. We have a caller, Harry, in New York. Hello, Harry. How are you?
Hello, Harry? Richard. Hi.
Yes, hi.
I keep hearing two things. Even in Barron's this week, they say buy blue chips because they're undervalued and they hold up during the depression. And the second thing is the dollar is falling, commodities are going up, buy gold. Now, what I keep hearing it over and over. Now, and also the last thing, Buffett came out this week and said things are not so bad. They've been a lot worse, and they're not so bad, and don't bet against the U.S. economy. We're going to make it.
Well, thank you. I mean, a really, really good question. Really good question, Harry. Did you know that in that edition of Barron's that you cite, 90% of all the recommendations in this week's Barron's were exhorting people to buy or buy aggressively across the board, whatever it was, fully 90% of all articles. I didn't read them all, but I did read that statistic late yesterday afternoon. And I think, of course, I mean, all of my listeners are aware of how bad things are and how bad they're going to get. I'm going to talk about bank failures in a moment when I've finished with your question, Harry. But the reality is that in terms of sentiment, it always is, it's a very strange facet of life that with your eyes closed, you can depend on sentiment to tell you what not to do. In other words, when everybody is bullish, it is time to sell. And when everybody is bearish, it is time to buy. And that is as reliable a piece of technical indication to the markets as anything I know is sentiment. And since we have almost a unanimity of opinion that things are going to get better, Harry, you can be sure that things are going to get worse. Just taking that one piece of information. I told you a little earlier about the Barron's Roundtable Conference. Remember we were talking about that at the beginning of the show? The same newspaper, Barron's, with their January annual conference where almost everybody was bullish on the markets. And that was before the meltdown. So as far as buying blue chips is concerned, I think you know what to do with that information. And I would put that also together with what I was talking to you about just now about Larry King's interview with those four, you know, retards. Gold, the answer to gold is, you know, gold may rally some, but you have to be very careful because gold is no longer tied to the dollar. It doesn't have the protection it had of the dollar, the gold standard back until 1971. so that any historical behavior of gold that you can identify from times past is rendered invalid by that very fact, so that gold may now just be considered as a commodity along with all the others. And this very day, ladies and gentlemen, as we speak right now, I can tell you that the market in wheat has had the biggest one-day swing ever in the history of the markets. Probably it's the end of the rally in the commodities. We've been waiting for the wheat market to collapse. As we speak, right now, it is collapsing, and it is clear that it's going to finish on a very negative note today. And I would be very cautious. I also think, Harry, that the dollar is going to rally because, as I've mentioned before, and it's quite a complicated equation, but as companies and investments go bankrupt, there is a black hole, as it were, in the dollar because those dollars disappear. Therefore, people who need dollars are going to have to buy them, and that could have an upward effect on the dollar. How long it will last, how far it will go, I can't tell you. But I would be somewhat cautious, using sentiment. Everybody thinks the dollar is going to go much lower. Everybody you talk to is on one side of the boat. And you know what happens to a boat when everybody is on one side of that boat? It collapses.
Right.
It capsizes, I mean.
Right.
And we're going
right.
to see, I think, a dramatic reversal in the trend of the dollar. How far it will go, as I say, remains to be seen. Buffett, I mentioned Buffett a few shows ago. I think Mr. Buffett may have seen his comeuppance. He has been very right. His mantra has been buy and hold. He started out investing in 1974 right at the bottom of the market. He held his positions. He's trying to add to them now. I think he may have made a fatal mistake, and I think his investments may plummet. I don't think this is a good move on Buffett's part, Harry.
Yeah.
Thank
you very much, Richard. You're a big help.
It was a pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. I thought I would take you through a bit of a process here about what I think is going to be the worst aspect of the coming depression, which is bank failures. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that because, you know, when people talk about banks going under, they don't really understand what that implies. And I thought it might be interesting to take you through a little bit of an explanation as to really how banks come to fail. And the first thing I would say about that is, and I want you to really understand this and be very clear about this. Over a third of the nation's community banks have commercial real estate concentrations exceeding 300% of their capital. And almost 30% have construction and development loans exceeding 100% of capital. Now, I'm going to repeat that because when you understand that, that's really all you need to know. Because if you accept that this whole snowball effect, starting out with subprime, is going to encapsulate and envelop everything in sight, you will know that commercial real estate, which, by the way, has already started to implode, is going to be gravely affected by this downturn. Okay, so I'm going to repeat that what I said before, and I want you to listen very carefully because this is a statistic that I want you to tell your friends. I want you to talk about this in your cocktail parties and other get-togethers where you meet people that you want to impress because this is a stunning figure. And this is, let me repeat it again, over a third of the nation's community banks have commercial real estate concentrations exceeding 300% of their capital. And almost 30% have construction and development loans exceeding 100% of capital. Well, ladies and gentlemen, how could banks possibly survive under those circumstances? I mean, you tell me, what you should understand right off the bat is that there is absolutely no way in which the government or the Fed or anybody else can stanch the flow of blood from these companies' balance sheets. No way at all. Okay? There will be more criticized assets, increases to loan loss reserves, and more problem banks. And yes, there will be an increase in bank failures. Let's just stop there a moment and take a call from Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Yes. Hi, Richard. This is Catherine from Westport, Connecticut.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. I enjoy listening to your show, but I must say it's rather scary. But it's the reality, and Gary's shows are about reality.
Well, that's why we call it the wake-up call, isn't it, Catherine? If it was to do with, going out and having a good time, we'd call it the relax call.
I'm into reality, but I must say it's I do some deep breathing when I'm listening to you.
Don't breathe too deeply because that might, along with everything else, that might put an end to it all. So take care, Catherine. Okay.
Yes. No. Anyway, my question is this. Well, first of all, I own an apartment in New York City, and I guess I'm kind of wondering. New York City real estate hasn't been affected, or it doesn't seem to have been so affected yet. But I'm not just calling for myself. My question is, ultimately, if people sell out of the market, then they have money. Where else are they going to put their money besides treasuries? I mean, real estate in some places has been a good investment because it's, New York City is New York City. So what is your – and a lot of Europeans have been investing in New York City real estate, residential real estate, because of the favorable translation for them of the euro or the pound, and so apartments for them are pretty cheap. So what is your thinking?
Okay, there are two words that you mentioned in all of the presentation of your question there that should be taken seriously. And you know what those two words are? Has been.
Okay.
As in, real estate has been a good investment. You are absolutely correct, Catherine. Real estate incontestably has been a fine investment, but it doesn't mean it's going to be a good investment in the future. And as anybody will tell you, if you really want to survive, you have to have the vision to see what is going to happen, after the event. It's like when you drive a car, it's no good saying, well, I haven't had an accident because I have been a good driver. You need to look down the road or any kind of hazards that may cause you a problem and require you to slow down. Otherwise, You might have your first accident. See, the problem is that you don't get good advice. I'm sorry, but it brings me back to the radio, the Larry King show that we were talking about. If these people gave good advice, if they were honest, and they put aside all their smiley faces, because, by the way, that interview was filled with people laughing, smiling. The Kiyosaki woman has this broad grin. She's really quite frightening because she's got this huge kind of rack of teeth, both up and they stick, and she knows it, and she thinks she looks really good. So she smiles through the most outrageously awful things that people say. The smile never leaves, and the problem is that when it comes to stuff like New York real estate, you're going to get the smiling broker coming at you and saying, this is, I had this on the market last week at, $542 and $1,000, and now it's down to $287. This is the best deal. I mean, you can't imagine how many people I've had looking at this. And you come right here today, you know what I mean? So you're not going to get advice. You're not going to hear these things. So what I have to do with you is I have to fill in the blanks, and I have to tell you, yes, a market in a sector which is the last to fall falls the hardest. That is how it works. That is the nature of the blue chips. The blue chips in any field, whether it's commodities, stocks, bonds, or real estate, are the ones which fall last and they fall the hardest. Why? It's very simple, because people think Manhattan is special. There's nothing that can go wrong. We don't have to worry. Yes, Europeans, come across, use your hard-earned euros, pounds, whatever it is, to buy real estate in Manhattan, and you'll do fine. And they suck the last suckers in right at the top, just before the whole thing falls apart. You know? And then, of course, it's an absolute panic. And you will see that in Manhattan real estate. And that's not because I'm a genius. It's not because I'm a clairvoyant, Catherine. It's because that's how it is. This is textbook investing for dummies. And you will find that that happens as sure as I'm sitting here today. And, you know, why hasn't it happened? I've given you the reasons why it hasn't happened. Will it come back? No. Will people be ruined? Yes. What is this we're talking about here? We're talking about the madness of crowds. People who like the lemmings, you know, like the birds flying across the sky when they change direction, they all go together. So they're all investing together in Manhattan, and trust me, they will all liquidate their investments together. It will be the traditional, you know, everyone rushing for the exits of the theater together, you know, and they all get trapped inside because they can't get out. You know?
But here's a question then. For those Europeans that pull out, who've been, because that's driving a lot of the New York City real estate market, is all the European or foreign money, they pull out, where are they then going to put their money?
Well, you mean where are they going to put what money they have left? Well, it's very simple. Either they're going to make another mistake and pile into some other kind of, you know, bubble, whatever bubble it may be, or they're going to do the right thing and put their money into treasuries, into treasury paper, into short-term treasury bills, you know, and protect themselves. You know, the U.S. government is the lender of last resort. I mean, it will not go bankrupt. You will get your money back. You buy U.S. Treasury bills and you don't get paid back, that really is the end of the world as we know it. No, you'll get your money back. In fact, U.S. Treasury bills are safer than money itself because they can't be stolen. They're your bills. Yes, that's what they will do. It's like it's an excuse. You know, oh, we have to have real estate because guess what? There's nothing else we can do with our money. Well, it doesn't work like that, Catherine. You know, there are no excuses for people who lose money. You lose money, it's your fault, you know? And frankly, you know, it's disingenuous of that guy on Larry King's show that I mentioned to say, you know, oh, well, you know, you need to be financially well-educated. Yeah, easier said than done. Like, it's your fault, you know, if there's a depression because the government didn't do what it should do because the Fed, exonerated itself from all blame and responsibility. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, either you put your money where it needs to go or you lose it at a time like this. And I am not going to, you know, pussyfoot around with this. This is the nature of the game. And those of you who play it correctly will save yourselves. Those of you who don't do what they have to do, even if I'm wrong, let's say I'm completely wrong and you should do something else. Well, if you don't do that something else, whatever it may be, you will suffer in consequence. So don't trust anybody. Don't trust me. Don't trust it. You need to hear the rules. You need to hear the different possibilities, and then you need to act. And what I'm trying to do here is to give you not only the evidence and the instructions, but the logic that goes behind it. And that's what's important to me, and that's how I decide what to do and what to advise. I look at logic. What is logical makes sense. That which is not logical doesn't make sense and should be ignored. What is logical right now, Catherine, is to get out of Manhattan real estate and put your money into treasury bills. You will not become rich overnight, but at least you will not become poor overnight either. So that's my advice to you. I will be back next week and the week after that, hopefully, next month. And then, you know, God willing, next year, I'll give you other advice as time goes by. I will tell you what to do after things have, you know, melted down. But until then, that's what you need to do. So thank you for your question. And this has been an interesting time with you today, ladies and gentlemen. Please don't forget Thursday at 2 p.m. Thursday at 2 p.m., Richard Martin with Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. So thank you very much. And I look forward to talking to you then. Take care. Bye-bye for now.